Nearly 20 million students were projected to attend American colleges and universities in this year's fall semester. That's about 5 million more than students than in the year 2000, but lower than the peak of about 21 million students in the fall of 2010. Those numbers are from the National Center for Education Statistics, which also estimates enrollment will increase between now and the fall semester of 2027. Those student populations are also expected to be more racially, ethnically, and economically diverse than in the past. And that raises some questions about the future of colleges and universities in the U.S. Our co-host Mark Brody talked more about that via Skype with Brian Alexander. He's a futurist specializing in the future of education technology. His new book coming out next year is called Transforming the University in the 21st Century, the Next Generation of Higher Education. And Mark started the conversation by asking Brian if the system is going to work for students. How big of a shift or change are we potentially looking at for America's higher education?
Well, it depends on what we mean by working for students. It depends upon which students and which models. So we can make some slight changes right now to better serve students. We can, for example, increase funding and support to student services, to academic and mental counseling. That can help. We can expand financial aid by trying to round out missing gaps, everything from small microgrants designed to help people over unfortunate fees to boosting financial aid in the form of, say, the New York State Excelsior grant. And I think all of those are positive steps. But in many ways, we have larger steps that we can take. For example, we could think about the enormous student debt problem. And that's something which has become a fantastic, fantastic problem. The median amount of debt right now for students who graduate or leave school with debt is about $30,000. And that amount is already having some knock-on effects. It's depressing the number of houses people buy, cars they buy, the date at which they get married or have kids. So, in fact, we may see some demographic fallout just because of student debt. So it would take a serious investment and a serious restructuring, not just of American higher education, but as well as of how the federal government supports it in order to try and address that.
So all the things you mentioned have to do with money and specifically paying for college. Is that the biggest area that needs adjustment, do you think, as opposed to what students learn, for example, while they're in college?
No, it's just one area. I mean, and it's an enormous area, and it's one that has impacts on what they learn. So, for example, the more terrified students are about the debt burden, the more likely they are to select majors and courses of study that they think are more likely to pay them better. But when it comes to the actual curriculum, we have to rethink that in many ways. We have to rethink it in terms of the changing student body. Do we have to rethink the way that our curriculum is suited for 21st century with rampaging emerging technologies? That's just curriculum. When it comes to pedagogy, we also have to think about what do we know about the best ways of learning? I mean, there's been some breakthroughs in the past 20 years, and that information rarely gets out to the actual practice of teaching. Much less we have to think about, for example, learning spaces, classrooms, libraries, quads, larger lecture halls. How can we better rethink all of those? I mean, we have the capacity. We have a lot of intellect, a lot of learning that can bring to bear in order to make learning more effective. It's largely a question now of the imagination and the will to bring that about.
Is it more a matter of imagination and will, or is it, I would imagine to some degree, it's also a matter of universities and colleges having the resources to do those things? I mean, if you're looking at changing up classrooms or investing in new technology so students can be up to date on the latest and greatest, that stuff's not cheap, right?
Well, you'll notice that I began my answers by talking about economics, and that's one of the major problems we have. I mean, in public higher education, we have been systematically across the board reducing the amount that we pay per student from state governments. So we have to reverse that. And that's going to be expensive. It's also politically very challenging. Beyond the cost, it also requires changes in mentality.
What role do you think online learning might have in this, either in, you know, sort of these massive open online courses or maybe smaller, more targeted online courses?
Technology plays roles throughout. And one way is by increasing access. And this is one of the great challenges, in especially in American higher education. Worldwide, there is a kind of communal sense that the human race needs more post-secondary education. The problem is it's more and more expensive to teach more and more students. And this is one way where technology can come in. It's more convenient, especially for adults. That is, if given the changes in the digital divide. there's another way it helps too, and this is part of the promise of digital technology, and it's been part of the heritage of computing ever since the early 20th century, is the idea of computing as a liberatory device, as a way of freeing up the imagination. So we give technology to students so they can express their voices. They can learn on their own. They can take some measure of autonomy. And that's a very, very positive use of technology. It's one that we really underestimate and understate. I mean, frankly, I think in 2018, this is the best year to be a learner in human history. You have more access to simply more stuff, more material, more co-learners, more instructors, more authorities. I mean, it's just a fantastic time to be a learner. It may be one of the most challenging years to run an academic institution, but for a learner, it's fantastic.
Well, I wonder then, if this is such a great year and a great time to be a learner, are we squandering some of that by not addressing some of the problems that you outlined earlier?
Yes. So that's a great question. I have one word to answer. Yes. It's one of the reasons we haven't addressed, there are a lot of reasons we haven't addressed these. Some of them are economic. For example, I mentioned the digital divide. When you think again about pedagogy, it's not easy for a lot of faculty to rethink their role as authority in the classroom. But to step back a little bit from the podium to say, I want to hear the student voice. I want to see what the students make of this. That can be risky. I think we really have to rethink all of education to take advantage, take maximum advantage of all this good potential.
What is a reasonable time frame, do you think, for colleges and universities to, if not maybe finish making some of these adjustments and changes that you're suggesting they need to make, but to at least get past the thinking about them phase and start the doing it phase?
They could start now. I mean, these are all ideas that have been floating out there since the late 1990s in terms of technology. I think the ideas are there. The awareness is there. Again, it really comes to imagination and will and the pocketbook.
Brian Alexander is a futurist specializing in the future of education technology.